Former Fed Chairman Greenspan speaks.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's the Morning Open. Hello, happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Which agency will watch over the friendly galaxy? That's coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Markets are mixed right now. The S&P up just a tad. The NASDAQ off a tad. And the Dow pretty much flat, up a point at 10,780. Pretty much going nowhere. European shares higher right now by about 0.5%. In Asia, markets were mostly up as well. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan is expected to speak today to the Brookings Institution. He's going to outline what he thinks went wrong with the financial system when the bottom fell out. Chris Lowe is chief economist at FTN Financial with us live this morning from New York. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
A lot of people blame Greenspan for the crisis because of the Fed policies back then toward housing and other things. Is Greenspan responsible for this crisis, or is he a scapegoat?
He is very much responsible, or at least the Federal Reserve is responsible. And the reason is, when you look at the crisis, the heart of it was all of the mortgages that are being defaulted on and ultimately going into foreclosure. What happened was the Fed lowered short-term interest rates to a point where mortgage companies were able to package up these loans with very low teaser rates. Those are the ones that are getting people into trouble today. Greenspan is arguing that wasn't because of where the Fed set rates. It was because of a regulatory failure. But it's the Fed that's supposed to set the regulations in the mortgage market. So I don't think there's really any way he can get out of taking responsibility.
And he advocated reduced financial regulatory powers, right, at the Fed?
Oh, absolutely. And remember, too, Greenspan led the Fed with an iron hand. There was no doing anything that the chairman disapproved of. And one of his key efforts was to reduce financial market regulation.
Interesting. Chris Lowe joining us from New York this morning. Chris, thanks.
You're welcome.
President Obama wants to outsource manned trips into space to private companies. That started a bureaucratic turf war. Yeah, apparently there's turf in space. Marketplace's Brett Neely has more.
Even when Neil Armstrong took his first step on the moon, there was red tape in space. With commercial firms vying to launch astronauts to the space station and tourists into low Earth orbit, the issue of how to regulate safety is heating up. At a hearing on Capitol Hill yesterday, both NASA and the Federal Aviation Administration argued they should take the lead on safety. The FAA already certifies commercial rockets carrying unmanned cargo, but NASA says it has enough experience to handle safety and is worried too much bureaucracy could strangle the fledgling industry. Henry Hertzfeld at George Washington University says more regulation in space is inevitable.
Right now, orbital activities are essentially unregulated because we haven't had them in commercial flights.
The private space industry will need a decision soon if it's to start launching missions before the decade is out. And the space shuttle is due to be retired by the end of this year. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Friday, March 19th, 2010, at marketplace.org. The Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro are 6 years away, and we're already hearing that money troubles are threatening the Games. Brazilian lawmakers want to take most of the oil tax revenue that Rio generates and redistribute the money to needy parts of that country. As Marketplace's Bob Moon reports, that could deny the host city billions it was counting on for the Olympics.
Brazil's president has promoted the country's recently discovered offshore oil reserves as a key to easing social inequality. But the local Olympic organizing committee is suggesting the money they represent made this possible.
The games of the 31st Olympiad are awarded to the city of Rio de Janeiro.
In recent days, the governor of Rio has wept publicly over the prospect of losing royalties worth $4 billion a year. That would make it impossible, he contends, to host the Olympics. But Christopher Garman, who watches Brazil for the Eurasia Group, doubts it'll really come to that.
I think this is a little bit of grandstanding that's going on. What the governor of Rio de Janeiro is doing is trying to make as much of a political splash as possible in order to ensure that if this reform proposal is approved in the Senate, that the president will veto that provision.
Indeed, President Luis Inácio da Silva is insisting on changes that won't jeopardize the Games. At the University of Texas, Olympic scholar John Hoberman says it's unusual, but no doubt effective, for local Olympic organizers to wield so much influence over such a politically charged matter.
The Olympic Games are a very big stick to hold in your hand when you are asking for an allocation of national revenues. So I would expect in the long run, they're going to get the money to support the games they are calling for now.
Local organizers are warning that any funding shortfall could lead to a breach of Rio's contract with the International Olympic Committee. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
This weekend, more than 100,000 are expected to gather in Washington, D.C., demonstrating for immigration reform and a path to citizenship. Now, business leaders have a vested interest in reform also. They want a cheap, reliable source of labor. And as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports, immigration reform has made some strange bedfellows, particularly in agriculture.
Traditionally, farm management hasn't seen eye to eye with farm labor. Manuel Cunha is president of the Nisei Farmers League in Fresno, California.
On other issues, we have some very strong opinions, just like they do, and we have not come up with any agreement on those other issues, but on immigration, we have.
On the other side, Giv Kashkuli is with the United Farm Workers. Of his union's collaboration with ag business leaders, he says,
it's unusual. It might even be unprecedented.
Both sides have endorsed a bill known as Ag Jobs. It would give farm workers a path to citizenship if they continue working in agriculture. Shah Kazemi is CEO of Monterey Mushrooms. He says immigration reform is vital for his industry.
Despite high unemployment rate, we still have a hard time finding qualified people to pick our crops.
Kazemi is sponsoring two farm workers to go to the immigration reform rally in Washington. Some members of Manuel Cunha's Farmers Association are also paying for laborers to make the trip, but Cunha won't say which farmers, and they won't talk publicly.
They can't because they'll be retaliated against.
Cunha's been on the receiving end of anti-immigrant vitriol.
I've had him personally tell me that I was responsible for a policeman's death by illegal aliens, and you're going to pay for that.
Undeterred, Cunha will travel to Washington next week. Ag business leaders will press Congress to pass the Ag Jobs legislation. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend to hear Jeff's report about grassroots Latino fundraisers for the March on Washington. Today, the world's biggest mining company, Rio Tinto, signed a deal with a Chinese company to work together on a major iron ore project in Africa. The news could thaw relations between the Chinese government and Rio Tinto after the two sides froze each other out last year. That's when China charged company officials with bribery, and that's a trial that starts on Monday. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Four Rio Tinto managers face up to 7 years in prison for allegedly obtaining business secrets from Chinese steel mills, and they face up to 20 years for taking bribes. Company managers have been detained in Shanghai since last July, and ever since, a chill has gone down the back of foreign businesses in China. Jim McGregor is with the PR firm APCO & Associates and former head of the American Chamber of Commerce.
Our companies are always out trying to gather information and learn things.
He says China's corruption rules are murky. This case reminds him you never know if you've crossed a line.
If the wrong person doesn't like what you're doing, can they accuse you of getting some secret? Who knows? Because nobody knows what all this is, because it's just very opaque.
Most in the business community expect a conviction. And yet, the decision may not be a game changer in the mining business. Rio still supplies iron ore. China still buys it to make steel. And when the trial opens on Monday, Rio Tinto's CEO will actually be in Beijing, speaking at a conference on strengthening global cooperation. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
China is stepping up its resistance to American pressure over its currency, the yuan. U.S. officials claim pegging its value to the dollar is hurting a lot of global commerce. Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich isn't so sure anything will get resolved anytime soon. He's here with us to talk about how this is going to play out. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Steve.
Not a whole lot of bipartisanship in Washington lately, as we know, but Republicans and Democrats did find something to agree on, that China must revalue its currency. I mean, why are they doing that now, Bob? And why is China pushing back?
Well, it's all about jobs, Steve, really, on both sides. If China allows its currency to rise against the dollar, as we want, we'd stop importing as much from them, and presumably we'd export more to them. But hundreds of millions of Chinese are migrating off farms and into cities in search of work. So China's artificially low currency is designed really to make sure there are enough jobs for them.
Is there anything that the U.S. government can do to pressure them?
Well, members of Congress want the Treasury to formally cite China for manipulating its currency, which would prompt an investigation by the Commerce Department and possibly import duties on Chinese products coming into the U.S. But, Steve, the administration fears if we did that, China would retaliate, which could hurt American companies now making and selling products over there.
One of those companies being Google, right?
Oh, Google is one example. Even though it's now in a face-off with China over censorship, the Chinese authorities probably aren't going to back down on that one either, again, because political stability is so important to them. And although it looks like Google may be pulling out of China, at least in the short term, over the long term, neither Google nor any other American company wants to lose access to 1.3 billion potential Chinese consumers.
What about all those treasuries that China owns, Bob? I mean, China's the largest holder of U.S. debt. Do they have us over a barrel because of that?
Well, let's put it this way. It's mutual dependency, Steve. They need the U.S. economy to recover, so we'll buy more of their exports. And they don't want to do anything that may harm the value of the dollar, because that would leave them holding a lot of dollars that are worth less than they potentially paid for them. So if our economic relationship unraveled, both sides would suffer.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich is professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Bob, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
And finally, every year, Geico Insurance, which is partly owned by famed investor Warren Buffett, puts out this video for its employees meeting. In this year's video, Geico employees sing a rock ballad about being there for customers, 24/7 support, and a hook line, "We do it all for you." And guess who shows up at the end of the video, donning long hair, bandana, and leather jacket a la Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses? You guessed it, the Oracle of Omaha himself. Even 79-year-old Warren Buffett can riff with the best of them. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Have a great weekend. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.